Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for March 8th, 2016. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and today I'm talking with Ivan Bogesky about calcium channels and redox signaling in monocytes. Monocytes are innate immune cells that engulf bacteria, and they produce reactive oxygen species, or ROS, to kill the bacteria. The production of ROS in monocytes requires that calcium flows into the cell through plasma membrane channels that are formed by ORI subunits. However, some ORI subunits are sensitive to and can be inhibited by ROS. A team led by Ivan Bogesky has found that the subunit composition of ORI channels in monocytes changes to allow the cells to sustain calcium signaling even while they're producing ROS. This switch also allows the cells to regulate their ROS production. Bogesky spoke to me from the Saarland University School of Medicine in Hamburg, Germany. Hi, Dr. Bogesky. Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
First, let's talk about monocytes. What do these cells do, and how do they do it?
So, monocytes are innate immune cells which are known to migrate to sites of infection where they differentiate into macrophages and dendritic cells. So, these monocyte-derived cells represent the first and dominant line of host defense. Together with the neutrophils and mast cells, they are also known as professional phagocytes. So, pathogen and cellular debris are recognized by these cells through pattern recognition receptors and are subsequently engulfed and endocytosed in vesicles, also known as phagosomes. So this process is called phagocytosis, and the oxidative burst, which generates superoxide and hydrogen peroxide via an enzyme known as NADPH oxidase, is an essential event in elimination of pathogens by the innate immune system. So defects in the ROS-producing enzyme NOX2 causes chronic granulomatous disease.
What role does calcium play in generating that oxidative burst in the monocytes?
Well, calcium plays a very important role. That has been known for several years now. So for oxidative burst to happen, the calcium concentration in the cytosol has to increase significantly. This increase in intracellular calcium is needed for activating an enzyme known as protein kinase C, which phosphorylates an essential component of the ROS-producing enzyme NADPH oxidase 2. So monocytes and other phagocytes use this reactive oxygen species to eliminate pathogens. So without calcium, we will have impaired immune response.
The oxidative burst in monocytes is important, as you said, for generating the reactive oxygen species, the ROS, that kill the bacteria. But those reactive oxygen species can also damage the host cells. How do monocytes protect themselves and their neighbors from these weapons that they make?
Yeah, indeed. So ROS are used by monocytes to eliminate pathogens. And monocytes, but also other cells, have developed several levels of antioxidant protection. Antioxidant enzymes, peptides, and small molecules, which are present in different cellular compartments, protect proteins, lipids, and DNA from damaging effects of oxidation. However, if the levels of ROS are too high, the capacity of the antioxidants will be exhausted at one point. So the best protection is, in fact, to control the ROS production in the first place. So we found that monocytes can do this by controlling the calcium entry across the plasma membrane. Reducing the entry of calcium would mean reducing the ROS production via the NADPH oxidase enzymes.
So what role do the ORI calcium channels play in this process by which calcium entry is used to control ROS production in monocytes?
So the ORI channels play an essential role. So what we have found is that there is a linear correlation between the calcium entry through the ORI channels and the NADPH oxidase 2 induced ROS production in human monocytes. I just want to mention here and repeat some things that you already used in your introduction. So the ORI channels constitute the so-called calcium release activated calcium channels, which are very selective calcium channels. They are three ORI isoforms, ORI1, ORI2, and ORI3, which form homo and hetero hexameric channel complexes. They are activated by ER proteins known as STIM1 and STIM2, And once opened, they allow calcium ions to cross the plasma membrane and enter the cell. So RI1, for example, is conducting calcium much better than RI3. This means that these channel complexes containing only RI1 will let more calcium in the cell than the channels containing one or more RI3 subunits. We have found that monocytes use this feature to control their ROS production.
You found that while monocytes are undergoing the oxidative burst, they change the composition of these ORI channels. Can you explain what they're doing?
Yes, so what we found is that, in fact, monocytes that are exposed to bacterial peptides or mice with acute lung infection, monocytes from these mice, they upregulate ORI3 and downregulate ORI1. And here I have to explain and reflect on something that we have found before, and that is that, in fact, and also you mentioned that in your introduction, is that ORI1 can be inhibited by oxidation. They possess a cysteine residue which is oxidized and then inhibits the activity of these channels. ORI3 are not affected by oxidation. So what happens here is we have upregulation of RI3, downregulation of RI1, which we think is an adaptive mechanism by which monocytes kind of change the constitution of their calcium release activated calcium channels to be able to function under oxidative stress. We found also that only one RI3 subunit into the hexamers renders the whole channel redox insensitive. So that means that the RI3 to RI1 ratio, the abundance of RI3 and RI1 play a very important role in regulating the crack channel activity in monocytes.
So when the monocytes start producing more RI3 than RI1, that has two different effects on the physiology of the cells. First, because RI3 lets less calcium into the cell than RI1, it's reducing the amount of calcium signaling, which in turn reduces the amount of ROS that's produced. But also, RI3 is not sensitive to ROS. So RI1 can be inhibited by ROS, but RI3 can't. And so by producing more RI3 than RI1, the cells are also enabling continued ROS production in response to an infection.
Yes, so the switch in abundance of RI3 and RI1 affects the immune response by controlling the amount of calcium entering the cells and thereby the amount of reactive oxygen species which are generated by the NADPH oxidase 2. However, this switch also has an additional physiological relevance. So we have shown that RI1 is inhibited while RI3 is not affected by oxidation, as I already mentioned, and that only one RI3 subunit is sufficient to render the whole channel complex redox insensitive. So in summary, we think that the upregulation of RI3 in monocytes will reduce their calcium entry and thereby ROS production on one hand, and on the other hand, this abundance shift will make the hexameric channels less redox sensitive and allow monocytes a prolonged production of reactive oxygen species.
Using your data, you've built a mathematical model about this feedback loop in the monocytes. How does this model help you understand calcium and redox signaling in monocytes?
Well, yeah, to fully understand the role of RI channels in monocytes, which is very complex, as we already discussed, we needed to design a mathematical model. There was absolutely no way that using only this classical experimental approach, we can answer all the questions. So using this model, we could calculate and predict results or different scenarios, which would have been very difficult to obtain by using the classical experimental approach. So this theoretical model was done under the supervision of Professor Heiko Rieger from the Department of Theoretical Physics at our university, a very close collaborator. So I will not go into details. Instead, I will use one example to explain how important such mathematical models can be in answering pure biological questions. So for our study, it was very important to find out which RI3 to RI1 ratio is needed for optimal monocyte function. So to determine this experimentally, we would have had to invest a lot of effort, and we would have still not been sure if we are right with our conclusions because of the complexity of this experimental approach. So instead, we fed the model with data that we already had and calculated that 0.4 would be the ideal RI3 to RI1 ratio. This made sense because a too high RI3 to RI1 ratio would be completely redox insensitive, but would not let much calcium in. On the other hand, in a case that we would have a very low RI3 to RI1 ratio, we would have had very high calcium entry, but also very high redox sensitivity. So the experiments that we performed later confirmed this prediction, which of course made us very happy. Yeah, so I would definitely highly recommend to those scientists that have the opportunity to collaborate with theoreticians to use this chance, because this kind of collaborations really have a lot of benefits.
I think it's really important to point out how mathematical modeling can be useful to understand biological phenomena and how those models can be used to make predictions that then you can go and test experimentally.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, I think it is also very important to invest some time so that we can understand how the people that do theoretical physics or mathematicians think, and they also need time to understand how we think. So people that do medical, biological research, they are, of course, two different worlds, but once people start talking and once you get the chance to understand how a mathematical model can help your research, then, as I said, the benefits are really high.
Dr. Bogeski, thanks for talking with me.
Thanks again for your invitation. It was really a pleasure talking to you.
That was Ivan Bogeski discussing a paper published in the March 8th issue of Science Signaling by Saul and colleagues. You can read that article online at stke.sciencemag.org. The Science Signaling Podcast is a production of Science Signaling and the American Association for the Advancement of Science, advancing science, serving society. If you have any comments or questions, you can write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and thanks for listening.